The questions I have are like, one of this session says that knowledge is superior to action, right? So looks like to enlighten the knowledge we need to conquer the action. So how did the Krishna got this knowledge before before doing all these things? Like Mahabharata is started from Krishna and Arjuna, right?
What do you mean Mahabharata started? No. They come much later. Mahabharata started much before. Didn't you see the TV Mahabharata? Arjuna comes much later in that.
No, my question is like, this one says that we need to conquer the action to unlock the knowledge. So how this knowledge got to Krishna?
Well, he got it from his teacher. No, what do you mean, how did knowledge got in? Question is not clear.
Like this one says that knowledge is superior to action, right?
Yeah.
So, like
so Krishna did his actions correctly and then he became fit for knowledge and got it.
Was it, can we say that Krishna got the self-realization because Krishna was in Mahabharata also is realized as a part of Lord Vishnu, right? So, I mean, in Indian philosophy, the God is like where you have the realization. So Krishna, for some reason, probably from his guru or from his action, he got the realization and then he became the guru by himself.
Oh, sure, yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah. You see that everyone should have the freedom to understand. I mean, if you see Krishna as well, he is an avatar, so he already has knowledge. If he has already knowledge, then you don't have to worry about how he got knowledge, since he is the Lord himself. But it's also possible to see him because he has taken, after all, a human body. He has to go through the human stages. So when he had a teacher, he did go to, what is Krishna's teacher's name? No, Amar Chitrakatha is here or what? Well, when he was small, he went to I think his name was Sandipani. That's one rishi called Sandipani. So he had teachers and he had learned. Yeah.
So he got a self-realization act when he was at his teacher.
Maybe later. Well, as a child, he did so many good things. Even when he was a tiny, tiny little baby, you know, he killed that demoness by sucking the poison out of her, and then the two trees. And there are stories. And so he was a little boy and running between two trees, and there were monsters, and he dropped, and you know, that big serpent. And so there are a lot of symbolistic things, I think. But he is, I don't know. I think he is. You know, he's Bhagwan himself, so these were just things that he was showing to the public as a demonstration of the powers that people can have. And so when he was older, he was like, I'm done, it's your time to do.
Yeah.
See, I read the Bhagavad Gita out of curiosity. Daily 1 month sloka we used to read, and I took the book which was available, which was Krishna Conscious Interpretation of Bhagavad Gita.
Gita as it is.
Yeah. I read that, but maybe Krishna, I think when I hear your interpretation and your explanation, at least Arjuna seems to have understood at the end of one session. I read the entire book, still I was left with so many questions. So I started reading another version of the book, which is by Radha Krishna, just started that again. One of the things when I read the first version is, somehow I felt that it was more towards the man's world, and women were not given the sort of importance that they should have been given. And I was trying to see the actual reality now, what has been exposed to me, the way I was brought up in this world, how I have been told that women also should be given importance. And when I read the entire Gita, I was finding quite a few times it was not complimentary to the women and more complimentary to the men. I was not able to reconcile that.
Why did you find not complimentary to women? I don't say anything here. I mean, unfortunately, this is the old translation, so everywhere the word man is used. But that's not in the Sanskrit itself, there is no man. Here man is used in the sense of what today we might say person.
Or It's the soul, it's the work, it's not basically man and women's world. And at that point of time, for example, the Krishna is telling to Arjuna that you go and do the war, fight. So, I mean, in that world, I mean, I don't think the women actually had the quote-unquote the way to do work, and women were supposed to do the household part. And there also, I think the, I mean, philosophy or the way it comes into the picture that you do your work and that's the way to you find your realization and your moksha.
No, like again, I said, I may have to read a second or third time to understand this thing. So,
maybe a different I think, because you know we were doing, you know, we had Gita Gnan going on for 3 years. Every Friday we did about 6 to 8 shlokas. It's by Swami Chinmayananda. There is no sex involved in that at all. It is such a pure and such a phenomenally wonderful book. It's like, oh my God, at the end of 3 years, the entire group that came religiously every Friday, we discussed how it has changed our lives. And it has totally, like, you know, made huge changes in our life. So I think it's the teacher, you know, that imparts, because it's how you interpret it. And if you have a teacher that misinterprets it, then because it's a very non-denominational, it just teaches you how to handle every situation in your life, leadership, wars, other people, and so on. I mean, every aspect of your life is in that book. So anything in life that's handed to you, you know exactly how to behave or how to confront or how to deal with it in a very positive way. It puts a very positive spin on a life.
I don't say positive spin. Okay. The book is positive, so you don't need to spin it.
Well, because I feel realization of Gita has positive spin.
Question: when you're talking about renunciation. Like giving the good example, when you go to Banaras, you renunciate something. Well, you renunciate something, you know, you don't like it, that's a very good example. But in real life, how we can take it, what we can renunciate it, that our life could be better, is so we don't have that much resistance within ourselves?
Well, the thing is this, we experience pain in life, we experience sorrow in life. And if we try to find out what is it that has brought me pain, what is it that has brought me sorrow, and renounce whatever it is that has brought you pain, then you won't have more pain. But we don't do that, so we keep on getting more pain. So when we get pain and sorrow in life, we don't have anybody else to blame. It's our clinging to different things that brings us sorrow. And all that we need to do is just let go. Vivekananda's one poem, he says, "Thine only is the hand that holds the rope that drags thee on." So it's like we are being dragged by somebody. We said, "Oh, I don't want to be dragged." But our hands are not tied. We are holding on to the rope which is dragging us. We just have to let go and we are free. So, but we are not able to let go, but yet we keep on complaining like, oh, it's so much of sorrow, so much of pain. You know, it doesn't have to be that way.
So still I'm going to have some resistance if I try to renunciate that reason.
Well,
I'm going to resist within myself.
Well, the resistance will come if that thing still holds a value for you.
Right.
For instance, now, if I know that this is water, and if I am thirsty, then of course I am going to drink it, which I have just done. And of course, if I am thirsty and somebody is going to take away this water, then I am going to resist it. Look, wait a minute, I need it. Right? But suppose I know this is poison. Suppose somebody is taking it away, I'll say, goodness gracious, take it away quickly as, I don't even want it. Right? But as long as something is of value to me, I won't let go of it. But if I look deeply and say, you know what, actually it's not good for me. And then the earlier it goes away, it's easy. So the resistance is because the thing is of still your value to you. Once it's no more of any value, you say, good riddance. The more quickly it goes away, the better it is.
So you need to fight with yourself, not fight, maybe not right word here. You need to change the value for that.
You don't need to change the, you cannot change the value. You need to look deeply into something and say whether it really is of value.
Yes.
So the value doesn't get changed. What happens is, it was never valuable to begin with. You thought it was valuable, so you clung to it. You look deeply and say, oh, no, it's not really valuable.
Can I give an example of that? I'm so sorry, Swamiji. Detachment, because I'll tell you what this Bhagavad Gita really helps in day-to-day life. I had this beautiful brand new car and I'm driving and smack, I hit a pillar and I'm like, darn. And like, it's only a car. I still haven't repaired it. That was 2 years ago. But you know, so it was just detachment. I thought, Bhagavad Gita, please help me out here. And you know, I really got totally detached. It was a stupid car and I'm still able to reach home, and so it, no problems. So you know, I think it's the sense of detachment again and again and again. You know, it's a you know, I mean, I think at least for me it's an effort. I have to make an effort to say I'm not attached to this thing because it's not so important. It's only creating problems for me, and right away it just melts away.
There was one person who bought a new car, and then just bought a car, and then he went for the first drive, and then he parked it, and then he opened the door and he's just coming out. Suddenly one big truck passed by and the whole door was just taken off by this. He's so furious because it's a new expensive car and the whole door is gone. And he started shouting and he's saying, what? This, my car is destroyed, etc. And then another person who was passing by saw that it was not just the door, his whole arm also had gone along with it. And he said, what are you crying for the door? Your whole arm is gone. And they looked at the arm and said, oh my God, my Rolex watch also went missing. So it depends on what you are attached to. So for him, the Rolex and the car was more valuable than the arm. What can you do?
So if there is no other question, we'll stop here.
Okay, well, last question.
That, we are servant of our body and mind, right? Hmm. So what is our existence without our body or mind? What is the other dimension?
Well, use your body as your instrument. Make the body your servant. Make the mind your servant.
Is there any other dimension? I mean, we are servant of our body or mind, right?
No, we are not. We have made ourselves to be.
What is the other dimension then? You know, like, body is our physical existence, right? And mind is our intellectual existence. So what is the other dimension? I mean, we are already the servant of those two, right?
Yes, but we don't have to be. We don't have to be the servant. So it's because we are their servant that we don't experience joy and fulfillment in life. That is why we feel that the presence of sorrow and suffering in life is because we have become servants of this. So if we can become masters of ourselves, only then that real Atma within will shine forth. And then that is the spiritual dimension of our life. Okay, so then we'll stop right now, and then the later portion we'll take it up afterwards. So.